Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy on KFI is provided by DSL Extreme at dslextreme.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my KFI podcast. This show originally aired on Saturday, December 16th, 2006, on KFI AM 640 in Los Angeles. This is show 309.
Saturday, December 16th.
KFI is the talk station that does live local news on the hour, on the half, and when it breaks at 11:05. I'm Ginger Chan, KFI News.
Thank you, Ginger. Good morning, everyone. Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI. Time to talk high tech every Saturday and Sunday, 11 to 2. Not just computers either, or Vista, or Windows, or XP, or Macintosh or Linux. No. The internet, cell phones. Cell phones are big. Camcorders, home theater, MP3 players. Anything having to do with technology. That's what this show's all about. 1-800-520-1KFI is the phone number. 1-800-520-1534. We can talk about a few things. Let me throw out a few topics that we could talk about today, or, of course, anything you've got on your mind. I'd love to hear from you. 1-800-520-1KFI. Adobe Photoshop CS3 is now out in beta. Downloaded it yesterday. Came out very early in the morning yesterday. My initial reaction looks good. The biggest change, of course, from the point of view of Mac users is it is Intel ready. Oh, haven't had time to really do any benchmark testing on them. I just got it. I was in Toronto this week. I just got in about 2 in the morning from Toronto, so no time to really talk about it, or to test it, rather. But I will certainly talk about it. See, I don't mind talking about it even if I know nothing. So that's one key element of a talk show host. You got to be willing to talk about anything, even if you have nothing at all germane to add. I opened it. I looked at it. I played with it. You can, if you have a serial number for CS2, you can enter that serial number and use it until the beta expires. I don't know when that is. If not, you've got 30 days to play with it. And there is slightly nude looking. The bridge has been updated. There's a lot of I think new and interesting stuff in Photoshop 3. I'd actually like to hear from somebody else who's a Photoshop wizard who's used it. It's an important application for a lot of people. The other big story, and I don't know if it's a story or not, Gizmodo, which is one of the two big gadget websites. There's Engadget and Gizmodo, and they're in, tooth and nails competition with one another. They're fighting, trying to get attention. Gizmodo on Thursday put just a very cryptic posting up. I can read it to you in its entirety. Gizmodo knows iPhone will be announced on Monday. That's day after tomorrow. I guarantee it, says the author. It isn't what I expected at all, and I've already said too much. Brian Lamb is the guy who posted this. He's one of the Gizmodo regulars. And, of course, everybody's saying, well, but it could be, it's the Samsung iPhone, right? Ha, ha, ha. It could be it's not true. It doesn't happen. If either of those things is the case, then I think this website has made a very big mistake. Don't you? I mean, I think they'll be burned if they are joking around or fooling around. I have to give it some credence. What is the iPhone? Oh, I should explain what the iPhone is. The iPhone is Apple's long-rumored, long-awaited cell phone. Now, it could be called the iPhone, and as somebody pointed out, it might not be a cell phone. They might release something tomorrow that is a Wi-Fi Skype phone or works with iChat, or I guess that's more likely, isn't it, than Skype. But I have to think that if they're going to do something called the iPhone, it better be a cell phone. There's been so much chatter about it. My friend Kevin Rose on his podcast Dignation kind of spilled the beans. He seems to have some friend at Apple, some insider, and said there'll be two versions, a 4 gigabyte and 8 gigabyte. It'll have dual batteries, which I think is a good idea for a phone that's going to play music as well as be a phone. One battery's for the music player. One battery's for the cell phone. Now you get better life that way. And you know, if you've listened to music all day, you still can use the phone. Prices are all over the place. The thing that Kevin said that I thought was kind of interesting is it will work on all carriers, so they'll have versions for all carriers. I don't think that makes any sense. If you are on a CDMA carrier, a Sprint or a Verizon, you can sell an unlocked phone, but then you have to somehow get a dealer. I guess you could do that. Get a dealer to add it to the network. Makes much more sense to do it as a GSM phone, which just requires a SIM card. That would be T-Mobile and Singular. Then if you already have a T-Mobile, if you're going to sell a phone, this makes sense. You sell an unlocked phone. If somebody is a T-Mobile or Singular customer or becomes one, they can just take the little chip that's in their phone out and put it into the iPhone and boom, they're done. The drawback to that is that the fastest third generation cell data networks are on Sprint and their CDMA. They're on Sprint and Verizon. T-Mobile and Singulars aren't very fast. And if I'm going to make an iPhone, this is all speculation, but if I'm going to make an iPhone, I'm going to make it easy to buy music online, right? That's Apple's, that's what Apple wants you to do. Speaking of which, another story that's a little scary from Apple's point of view, iTunes sales have plateaued. Now, this comes from Forrester Research. It does not come from Apple. The reason it doesn't, Apple never breaks out its sales. So you can't tell if the iTunes, you can't tell how much their sale. Now, what's weird is Forrester said the sales were down 65% based on our surveys. And then there's immediately a response from another analyst who says, no, that's crazy. Sales are up. According to Forrester said sales were down 65%. American Technology Research says it's up 95%. No, I don't know. Apple's not saying a word one way or the other. Look at your own behavior. Are you buying more or less music online? If you're buying less, in a way, it could be the failure of the music companies. By being so contentious, I think in some ways they've kind of poisoned the waters. People didn't really like record labels to begin with, and now by suing people right and left, they're kind of not making any friends here. People like the artists, right? They like the musicians. That's who they love, passionately. And I think when people feel like the money's not getting to the musicians, that these rapacious record companies are standing in between them and the people they really love, they're not going to give the money to the record companies. And the more the record companies foster that perception, the fewer records they're going to sell, and the more people are going to go online and steal the music. There's no question that online music theft is going up, peer-to-peer file sharing. More people are using it every year. Millions and millions and millions, despite the lawsuits, despite the negatives, and there are a lot of negatives. It's a great way to get spyware and viruses. More people are doing that than ever before. So it would make sense, I guess, that music sales would be down. I think if you give people a good experience and the sense that the money's going to the artists, not to greedy record labels, people will buy music. They don't want to put money in the pocket of BMG and Sony, but they'd love to put money in the pockets of the Rolling Stones and the Beatles, don't you think? There is good news, whether you believe Apple's music sales are off or not, there's good news for Apple hardware sales. Growing fast. One Wall Street analyst says Apple could sell more than 9 million computers next year if market share continues to grow as it has. A lot of excitement going on around Apple right now. Between the iPod, the successful move to Intel, the iPhone, man, they manage the news cycle, don't they? you can look awfully hard to find news stories about somebody else, let's say Dell, that aren't negative. Let's talk about Avista. That's exciting. New windows coming out. Oh, that's exciting. Yeah. It's pretty. Yeah. Uh-huh. Okay. Well, we've wrapped it up there. Well, I mean, I've been playing with it. I like it. I've been using it. I like it. There's some issues, I think, with memory. There's one program I use that is an XP program. It probably hasn't been tuned for Vista yet, so it's hard to judge. Adobe Audition. I use it all the time. It's my main Windows program. It's the audio editing software I use for this show and for all the podcasts I do and everything. Much slower in Vista. And I actually think it's a memory thing. I only have a gigabyte on that. Only a gigabyte on that machine. Maybe I need more memory. Everybody's saying Vista needs a gigabyte by itself. Maybe if you've got programs that use a lot of memory, you need 2 gigabytes. It's hard to tell. I mean, I guess I'll have to wait and see if Adobe updates Audition to work better. It doesn't work very well right now in Vista. But a lot of other things work well. And the more I use Vista, the more I am impressed with its security model. You know, if you try to make any system changes, first of all, it's easier to run as a limited user. You don't have to run as administrator. That's not true of XP. It's really hard if you're not running as administrator in XP. It's a snap in Vista, as it should be. Unfortunately, Microsoft's installer doesn't install a limited user and suggest you use it. It installs you as administrator, and we know that people just do what the people very rarely change the defaults. So I'm going to have to go on a big education campaign saying when you install Vista or when you use it for the first time, the first thing you should do is create a new account. It is a limited user account, not an admin account, and use that day in, day out. And it does it very well because whenever you need to do something that would modify the system, it'll ask you for an administrator password, just as OS X has done. That's going to make, by itself, that's going to make a big difference. But we've got to get people to start using limited user accounts. Oh, by the way, there's already a crack for a Photoshop CS3. It's been out a day, and somebody's cracked it. It's pretty amazing. This is why copy protection ultimately never works. Hey, let's talk about any of those subjects. Anything else you'd like to talk about? Here we go. 1-800-520-1KFI. 1-800-520-1534. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI AM 640. More stimulating talk radio.
KFI News. Fueled by the worldwide resources of Fox News. KFI AM 640.
KFI AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI. Let me give you the phone number and then we'll get right to the phones. 1-800-520-1KFI. Show notes are online, by the way. Always have a website. One page per show. Makes it nice and easy. And Shuby is in there. Everybody's favorite high school sophomore who... is in there scribbling furiously as I talk, and he'll put those all in there. If you just go to kfiam640.com and click my name under shows, and then the official link is on that page, or that'll take you to leo.am, and that's where you'll find the show notes. This is Saturday's show 309 of the year. Just a few more to go. We also have audio archives there if you want to go back all the way to the very first show, 001, which was in 2004. You have a chat link there, which will take you to irc.dslextreme.com. They provide the chat server. Right now, 78 people in chat. That means there's lots of room. And you say hi to Dan and Dustin, Illuminati, Mike, Oliver. I should put the Leobot on in there. You say hi to Leobot. And then I go in too. The chat room's kind of fun. It's the back chat, the back channel. But I watch it carefully because there's a lot of good information in there. And so often when we're talking, I'm watching, hoping they'll have an answer if I can't come up with one. Kevin Crestline, KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hello, Kevin. Happy holidays.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm good. I have been going through an adventure with trying to get a TV tuner card into my new computer.
An adventure? Oh, no.
Yes.
Adventures don't sound good when you talk about technology.
It was supposed to be simple, but
yeah.
It turned out to be more complex than I could have imagined.
What were you trying to do?
Well, I got a little USB card. Well, it wasn't even really a card. It was one of those ones.
Yeah, a little dongle.
ADS.
Yeah.
A little dongle that plugged in the back.
Yeah, I have that. I have that actual card. ADS Tech makes them. Yep. I know.
Yeah, and I tried that out, and it didn't. The video quality was very poor.
And that's
it was kind of. Yeah, kind of wavy.
Yeah, it's USB too. I mean, there's an antenna issue, but it's also because it's USB.
Yeah, I had it hooked up direct to cable.
Yeah, so then it's not a reception, is it? Remember that with USB, you have to compress it down before you send it down the pipe, because USB doesn't support enough speed, really, to get good quality video.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
So those little dongles have a compressor. Yeah, all right. So we reject that as a solution.
Yeah, and I went out and got an ATI HD TV PCI card.
Oh, yeah.
Very fancy.
Oh, I was excited. Yeah, now that one unfortunately doesn't do cable, does it?
Well, it claims to on the box. It says it supports analog.
Analog. TV. Analog. Did you hear that word?
Yeah.
Analog. That's the problem. Uh-huh. You're trying to get it off a digital cable box.
No. Actually, I have my cable split in from I have one digital box, and then it has analog throughout the rest of the house.
Well, but you have to understand that the analog channels are 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. You understand that, right? They don't go up above channel 30, whatever it is, 50-something.
Oh, okay.
Well, yeah, people often confuse that. You know, analog, most of your cable's not analog anymore.
Okay.
What they're telling you is that HDTV tuner really is an on-the-air tuner. It is for putting up an antenna and getting over-the-air signals compressed in VSB. You have on your digital cable box high-def signals in QAM, Q-A-M, which that card doesn't do. It could do it. The chipset could do it. But the problem is that the copy protection issues. They don't want you to be able to get high-quality digital copies of movies in your computer.
Oh.
So it's hobbled by the content rights owners prevent ATI from making that what you want it to be.
So anyway, all the software did not install. It conflicts with my ATI graphics card to get it to install.
You probably should just...
and oh, if boy. I uninstall it, I end up with
nothing. With nothing. My recommendation, since that HDTV card probably isn't going to work except with over-the-air signals, unless you have good... Of course, you do. You can get OTA HDTV, but that's all you'll be able to get on that card. My suggestion is get an ATI All-in-Wonder. Bring it back. Get an All-in-Wonder Radeon. Could be the duplicate of the ATI card you've got with the built-in TV features. That's the best way to do it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. It's 11:29. Ginger Chan is in the KFI News Center.
It's your weekend. We just make it more stimulating.
KFI AM 640.
11:38. KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. Everything's going HD, isn't it? And I think so many people got HDTVs and are getting HDTVs this year, and the price on HDTVs has dropped so dramatically. Some plasmas are one-third what they cost a couple of years ago. One-third. Still expensive for a TV, but boy, for a movie theater experience, I mean, the idea of a home theater has gotten so inexpensive. And now a lot of programming is going to HDTV. I'm happy to say that my TV show is finally going to HDTV. I've always been scared if you work in TV, especially if you look like I do, HDTV offers terrors. I think for a lot of women, it does too. Because, it's a little more accurate. It does not, how they used to shoot the old movie stars through gauze. Heck, they still do it. Well, there ain't no gauze in HDTV. I guess you could still do that, but people who have HDTV sets want it to be as clear as possible. So you see exactly what you see is what you get. What you got is what you see, what they see. That's a new thing. I should coin that. What you got is what they see. W-Y-G-I-W-T-S. Wigiowitz. So, you know, it's people like Kelly Ripa who are just so gorgeous, just naturally gorgeous. And when I, you know, when I do Regis and Kelly, I often go back to chat a little bit with Kelly. And frequently before she's got her makeup on, she doesn't need makeup. But they, but of course she does HDTV. And they use different makeup techniques, boy. They use airbrushes. I'm not kidding. They use airbrushes to give it a much more smooth finish. Otherwise, you can see the makeup very clearly. So everything's a little different. Anyway, I've resisted it for a long time, but we're now going to start shooting my TV show, Call for Help, around February or March. We're buying all new cameras, and we're going to rename it, change the sets. I'm going to get a makeover. I think I better. Oh, boy. But it's, you know, and if we're going HDTV, you know, everything else is. There's enough. I think the key is that enough people have sets now. So getting HDTV into your computer is, you know, in a way worth doing. Your computer monitor is often as good as or better than, higher resolution than your any TV set in your house. If your monitor can do 1024 by 768, you could do high def, 720p high def. And if you have a higher resolution monitor, say a 1600 by 1200, you could do 1080p high def. So your, you know, a large computer monitor is often the best TV in the house. But getting HDTV to work on a computer, as we were talking with the last caller, is not necessarily easy. You have to remember that there are different ways to get high def signals, at least four. You've got on the air, OTA, or over the air, which, you know, if you live near LA or near a metro, San Diego, almost every, you know, major television station in the country has gone HD. So you'll have, now, not all their shows are HD. But, you know, when you watch The Tonight Show, it's HD. A lot of sporting events are HD, and they look great in high def. So that's one way to get it. Of course, your cable operator almost undoubtedly offers you high def. You have to pay more for it. You have to get a digital box. You can also get it from your satellite provider. That's three. And I think the cable and the satellite both look pretty good. Cable has more bandwidth. So down the road, as there are more and more HDTV stations, you'll see more of them on cable than you'll see on satellite. Satellite has constrained bandwidth. I mean, it's expensive to add more. But for right now, it's pretty. There's pretty much parity there. And frankly, a lot of the networks like ESPN, the way they're making it HDTV is they're up-converting. And so it's not, you know, necessarily going to look great. I'm always disappointed. A lot of the stuff you see on ESPN HD is standard def. They put the wings on the left and right because it's not really high def. And then the fourth way to get it, of course, is with a high-def DVD player now. And there are two choices. There's the HD DVD and the Blu-ray. We talked about this last weekend. I really think HD DVD is going to start pulling ahead. It's still a horse race. It's still by a nose. You know, it's very, very close. But there's HD DVD is starting to pull ahead, mostly, I think, because of the failure of the Sony PlayStation to get Blu-ray into the marketplace. That was really important. You won't really be able to declare a victor until you see Disney and Sony and MGM, the Sony-owned movie companies, all until you see movies from them on high on HD DVD on H because you know they're all Blu-ray, and until you can buy a Disney movie on HD DVD, there's a lot of parents there and they're not going to buy an HD DVD player. But my point is they're not going to buy a Blu-ray player either. Not so you could see Snow White in high def. Yeah, maybe you will. If it had come with the PlayStation 3, which it does, if it PlayStation 3 would have been more affordable, more available, that could have been enough to make a difference. But I think HD DVD is ahead by a nose, let's put it that way. And would I recommend buying one? Well, if you've got a high def TV, it sure looks good to watch those high def movies. Even standard definition movies look good if you have a good up converting DVD player that converts it to 720p. They look pretty good. But if you compare the two, there's a lot more crispness in the HD or Blu-ray DVDs. So it is. If you've got a high-def TV, I guess it's worth it. That's the other reason I think that HD DVD might pull ahead, because the HD DVD players have two big advantages. They're half the cost, $500 instead of $1,000. And you're starting to see many HD DVDs with standard DVDs on the other side of the disc. So you get both. The HD DVD process is very similar to the standard DVD process, which means, I think, in the long run, you'll see a lot more conversions to HD DVD than to Blu-ray. But it's all prognostication at this point. We don't know yet. The real thing that consumers are waiting for, I think many consumers are waiting for, is a hybrid player, one that plays both standards. There's no sign that that's going to happen. We're not sure why, but I think it has to do with licensing agreements. So it may be some time before you're able to buy a player that plays both. And there are many, many journalists who think, tech journalists, who think that neither format will succeed because as we get closer and closer to electronic distribution of high def, people are just going to say, I can't decide Blu-ray, HD, DVD. Let me just download it. And if that becomes commonplace, then it's over. Jeff in San Francisco, KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Leo, can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you. You're a little scratchy, but you're okay. What can I do for you?
Yeah, I've got coming from Apple this week a new MacBook Pro, my first Intel machine.
Oh, you're going to love it.
And I've also got the Parallels desktop coming to me, and I want to know some best practices about getting started with Windows on the Mac. How do I do it, and what things to look for?
Well, of course, as you know, there are two ways to do it. There's Boot Camp, and there's Parallels, which you've already ordered. I like Parallels for the convenience. The next version, I'm going to put you on hold because of the scratchiness, but just keep listening. The next version of Parallels, which is already in beta, and this is cool, won't require a separate install of Windows. You can use your Boot Camp install. So that gives you the best of both worlds. The nice thing about Boot Camp is you get it's a native PC. It runs at full speed. And so if you have an application that really demands power, then Boot Camp is better. But I do not use Boot Camp. I just use Parallels. It's so easy. It's so fast. Number one is you got to have a lot of RAM. I would allocate a gigabyte of memory to the Windows partition and a gigabyte that leaves a gigabyte at least to OS X. You need 2 gigs on your MacBook Pro to run Parallels at all smoothly. You will not get Aero Glass in Vista, unfortunately, but it performs well. I think it performs very nearly as well as it does on a native machine. And the MacBook Pro is a Core 2 Duo is very fast, so I think it's great. One thing I would do after, you'll make your first install, you'll create the virtual machine, you install Windows, I would make a copy of that first install, that image file. It'll be around 10 gigs. I start with 10 gigs. There's two choices, by the way, on the hard drive allocation that you can use. You can use an expanding drive or a static drive. Now, the advantage of the static drive, it's faster, but it can't grow. If you assign 10 gigs, that's as big as your Windows partition could be. On the expanding drive, it's a little slower, but it expands as needed, which is really great. In any event, make a copy of your it's essentially making an image copy. So you'll have an extra copy of your Windows partition. So if something goes wrong, you get spyware, viruses, crashes, you can throw out the old one and just start using the new one. Making a copy first, of course, so you always have a fresh copy. Other than that, I think just go for it. Have fun. And keep an eye peeled for the new updated Parallels, which has one feature that is just mind-blowing called Coherence, which takes it to the next level where you're running Windows applications side-by-side with Mac applications, Windows and Mac running at the same time. You've got a toolbar and a taskbar, an OS X dock and a taskbar, and it's just incredible. It's kind of hard to imagine, but once you do it, you'll realize you've got the best of both worlds. There's no question. That's the way to go. You're running Windows and Mac simultaneously, seamlessly. If you need a Windows app, you launch the Windows app. You need a Mac app, you launch the Mac app. Parallels is Parallels.com and highly recommended for any Intel Mac owner. 11:49, 11 away from noon. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640. More stimulating talk radio.
News without the snooze. Bill Handel, Monday morning, 5 to 9.
KFI, AM 640.
11:56, KFI, AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI. Jackie in Malibu. Hello, Jackie. Welcome to KFI.
Hi, Leo.
Hi, Jackie.
How are you?
I'm great.
Leo, I recently bought a Sony Vaio laptop.
Okay.
And it's been about 6 weeks, and I thought I'd make the recovery media disc.
Good.
Because it came without them.
Yeah, you're supposed to make them yourself.
Okay, so when I started to do the process, I got a message that said it could not start this program because the recovery partition has been deleted.
Ah!
I don't know what that means. I chatted with the Sony Tech people.
Did you did you change anything? Did you modify any partitions or install any software, you know, operating system or anything?
I installed
application.
Office,
no, that wouldn't do it. You'd actually have to like take a Windows disk and install Windows on top of it.
No.
You bought it new. You're sure it wasn't refurbished?
Oh no, it was new from the Sony store.
Huh. Well, then you take it back to the Sony store and say, you doofuses.
Well, I thought it was pretty serious. The instructions the tech people gave me was to reset the BIOS, and they gave me a link to a page that takes you through the steps.
But well, try that.
I always thought it was a big deal.
No, that's not a big deal, but I don't know if that's going to fix anything. Maybe they know something about their hardware that's unusual. The way Sony and a lot of companies work, Dell does this, HP, is they put hidden partitions. You know, they take that single physical disk and they put hidden partitions on it. Sometimes with, you know, nothing much, just an identifier saying, yep, it's a Sony computer. Sometimes, as in your case, that's where Windows actually lives. They have a Windows install disk on that hidden partition. And so it can't make the recovery disk unless it has the data on that partition. Now it sounds like they know that they've got there's a problem on some of the firmware, and that partition exists, but the firmware can't see it or something. So I would try what they recommended. But if if it doesn't work, then you take it back and you say there's no hidden partition on here. You guys screwed up.
Yeah, and it's a Core Duo.
Yeah, there should I would listen to what they said. They may know something that I don't
know.
But
the other thing is, I can't stream you.
You can't stream me.
And I hate on Mozilla. And I hate to go to Internet Explorer when I want to do that.
I don't blame you. I'm not an expert on the streaming system that they use, but I do know it's Windows Media specific. You might make sure that you have the latest Windows Media Player. And we do have a
plug-in?
Well, you don't need a plug-in. It should just play automatically. If you go to the chat room, they can help you get it working. They have a special link and so forth that might help you. Just stop by the chat room and they will give you a hand, I promise you. You should be able to just push the button on KFIAM640.com and it should start. It should work in Mozilla. I have to try that, but I don't think there's a problem with Mozilla because it's using Windows Media Player. But it could be that you don't have the latest Windows Media Player. I would make sure you run Windows Update and get all your updates too. That's important. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI. Thank you for listening and calling, Jackie. Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI, AM 640. More stimulating talk radio, 1159. Lisa Osborne's in the KFI News Center.
Saturday, December 16th.
It's 58 in Laguna Beach. It's 59 in Brea, 61 in downtown L.A., 55 degrees in Burbank. KFI is a talk station that does live local news on the hour, on the half, and when it breaks. It's 12:06. I'm Lisa Osborne, KFI News.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you, Lisa. Leo Laporte here, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. I am the guy. 1-800-520-1KFI is the number if you want to talk about high tech. In fact, I'm going to keep taking calls after 2 this afternoon. Dean Adell's coming up at 2, John and Ken at 3 with a fresh show. But I will be continuing to take your calls off the air till 4. We're taping ahead. So 1-800-520-1KFI would be a good number to call now and a good number to call from 2 to 4 this afternoon as well. Pat in Laguna Hills, KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello.
Hello, Pat. How are you today?
Hi, it's me. I figured as soon as I went for lunch, you'd...
Yes. You see, that's the thing. I wait till you leave, and then I go to you.
Exactly.
Yeah, mean.
Okay. My problem, I've been dealing with this problem for like 4 days already, and I need to get an antivirus program onto my computer because I need to get on the Internet. So my problem is that I bought a Toshiba laptop about 2 years ago, and I have an XP operating system, and it had a Norton 2004 antivirus program on it.
Mm-hmm.
And when I about a month ago, I got a new hard drive.
Mm-hmm.
And I decided to upgrade to a 2007 Norton antivirus.
All right.
And that's my problem.
Why?
I deleted the Norton 2004.
Okay.
So now my computer has no antivirus on it.
Oh, you didn't do the upgrade.
And I wasn't able to do the upgrade.
Okay. Well, I don't like Norton anyway.
You know, that's what I'm hearing after I... So what I did was, returned the Norton, and the only one that... The other one that they had at the Office Depot...
Is McAfee.
...was McAfee, yeah. Virus Scan Plus.
I don't like that one either.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. So part of the reason is those are the two big ones, right, that everybody sells. And so that's why when somebody writes a virus, the very first thing to do is disable those two.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not as effective. And frankly, the main reason I don't like them, they're bloated. They're so much in there. And they cost
too much.
Yeah, too
much. That's
what
I'm thinking. That's why I was calling.
You are so smart, Pat. The corporate versions of both are fine.
What do you mean corporate versions?
Well, you can't buy them. But if you're a business, many businesses use either Norton or McAfee. And they're small and lightweight, and they work great. But I don't understand why they don't sell those to consumers. I guess it's because consumers are looking for the checkboxes on the back. Oh, does it do that? Yes. Does that? Oh, look, it's got more checkboxes than the other guy. Must be a better program. And we're really bad that way. We've really driven the companies to bloating their software. So, my recommendation for novice users, for people who don't want to waste a lot of energy on this, is just go. You could do this online.
I can't do it online. See, that's the problem. What? I don't want to get online.
Oh, well, you could get online just to do this, okay?
Well,
you know where you get most viruses, Pat? It's not from the internet, not from the web. It's from your email.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have email?
Yeah, I have email.
That's more dangerous.
Outlook Express, but I don't know what. I just read someplace that from doing all this, having to do all this, that 5.5 I should have at least that version of Outlook.
Outlook is awful. Don't use Outlook. But first, but we'll get to that in a moment. If you're sending and receiving email, Pat, that is the biggest risk for viruses, not the web. So you're all worried about going and surfing the web, and in fact. Mm-hmm. You're already, doing the thing that is most dangerous. Most viruses are spread via email, via email attachments. That's why you should have.
Well, I don't open any attachments.
Yay, Pat, you're paying attention.
Except if I know who they came from, and then I ask them where they came from.
Yeah. Most viruses will come to you from somebody you know.
I had a virus, and that took like 2 weeks.
Yeah, you understand.
My body can do it, can get better faster than my computer.
Computer viruses are worse than the norovirus, let me tell you.
They'll
make you real sick. So a virus comes from somebody you know because they got infected, and then the virus looks through their mail address book and sends it to everybody. So it comes from your buddy. So you're right to be suspicious of attachments, and you're right to say before you open attachment, did you send me this? Mm-hmm. Did you mean to send me this? Because a lot of people say, oh, look, John just sent me a picture. I'm sure it's something cute. They open it and boom, they're dead.
Mm.
So you're right to worry about email attachments. I recommend you can go online just this once, Pat. Just go right to this one site. Don't do anything else. It's really, it's not that risky, really. But to go to windowsonecare.com.
All right. Windows what?
Windows one, O-N-E, care, C-A-R-E.
onecare.com.
Windows One Care. It's all one word. This is Microsoft's antivirus.
Oh, this is Microsoft.
Microsoft's. They have a 90-day free trial. It's and it's more than antivirus. It's antivirus. It's anti-spyware. It tunes up your security. Has a lot of nice features. It's very affordable. You can cover up to 3 computers for one price. And for inexperienced users who are just looking for a simple solution, that's what I recommend. Now, you probably just heard me do an ad for Nod 32. That is my favorite antivirus. It is fast and lightweight. But I think sometimes it intimidates novice users because it has a lot of...
What's the name of it?
Nod, NOD32.
NOD32.
Yeah, that's...
I never heard of it.
No, well, and that's one of the reasons it's good because, antivirus authors... virus authors, I should say, just as all hackers, they go after the big, the easy targets. And that means they look for McAfee. They look for Norton because that's the most common, right? So they're actually frequently a virus will find your antivirus and disable it. Uh-huh. and then say, okay, oh, everybody in, come on, the yeah, water's fine. So windowsonecare.com is a very simple, easy to use one, 90 days. You could try it and see if it's, you know, it doesn't slow your system down. If you want really heavy duty protection, or, you know, and you're a really experienced user, www.eset.com is not 32. But I think for people who just, you know, don't want to think about it, I just want to just, you know, and it's really what Microsoft should have done all along, to be honest with you. So they're doing it now. It's I think it's $30 for up to 3 computers per year. They're all about the same price. But it has the antivirus, anti-spyware, firewall. It does all of the kinds of stuff that you need. It's really made for Windows. It's very easy to use, and you won't even notice it. It just runs. And you could try it for 30 days or 90 days free. WindowsOneCare.com. I use Nod 32, but as I said, I'm an expert user, and I like to tune my antivirus. Gilbert, San Gabriel, KFI.
Hi.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hello, Gilbert.
Hi, Leo. I need your help.
Okay, everybody who calls me needs help.
I'm a music buff. I love music, and I got iTunes with a huge library. I just recently upgraded it because it wasn't burning fast enough. It was taking me for like 20 songs or on a CD. It would take a good 12 to 15 minutes just to burn it. So I upgraded, and I shut down the computer. Next day, I tried to open it, and I got a warrant.
Warning.
Error. Audio configuration error.
Oh, no.
I can't open my iTunes. What did I do?
Oh, yeah, yeah. First of all, it wasn't going to speed up anything. It's this, the limiting factor is the speed of your CD burner, not the software. So to speed up burning, you got to get a faster burner, not faster software. Now, but let's fix this problem here. You're running on Windows, right?
That's correct.
Uh-huh. I don't know why, but I always get the iTunes problems on Windows. I guess because Macs come with iTunes built in. But iTunes seems to have more trouble with Windows. You're able to get into Windows, right?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. Everything else seems to be working okay.
Uninstall two things, QuickTime and iTunes, okay?
Okay.
QuickTime and iTunes. Just run the uninstaller. This will not affect your library. Your music is all still there. You should back it up anyway.
Right. Okay.
It's just in a folder called the iTunes Music.
Okay.
You know, just back that folder up. That's a, you know, if you've got a lot of music in there and this is your life, you know, don't mess with that. That's put that on another disk, another drive. Get it out of the house. That's valuable to you. But uninstalling iTunes won't affect it. Messing up iTunes won't affect it. That's not going to, you know, it's data. It's safe. It's safe from iTunes anyway. So uninstall iTunes in QuickTime. The problem when people have trouble with Windows and iTunes usually seems to come down to QuickTime, not iTunes. I don't know why that is, but it does. What I would suggest is you first install QuickTime all by itself. Go to apple.com/QuickTime and just get QuickTime for Windows. And make sure it's running reliably and everything's fine before you go to the next step.
Okay.
You know, reboot, open QuickTime, play some music from the QuickTime library, whatever. Make sure everything's fine there. That's where iTunes seems to get messed up. I don't know why. So now you've got a working copy of QuickTime, and you probably should just download iTunes without QuickTime. And now Apple doesn't make this very easy to find.
Right, I couldn't find it at all.
Yeah, but in fact, there is a link to get iTunes, just iTunes, not QuickTime. And I think for Windows users, I kind of recommend that people do this instead of getting iTunes and QuickTime. And it just seems to be a problem. I don't know. Now, let me see if I can find that link on the Apple site.
Okay.
You will need QuickTime 7. So make sure you get QuickTime 7.
Right.
Apple used to have a link. We'll put it in the show notes because I can't find it off the top of my head here. But their Apple has... where is it? Oh, yeah, I'm looking on the web. You know, this is what you do. You do iTunes without QuickTime. Site:, I'm going to give you a new, by the way, a better Google in a second. Site:apple.com. I'm using a new version. Download iTunes without QuickTime. That's what we want to find. Maybe they don't offer it anymore. QuickTime download. Let's see here. Yeah, they really want you to get QuickTime and Apple. Well, I tell you what, try installing QuickTime separately. And then, when you install iTunes at that point, it should say, oh, you've got the latest QuickTime. I'm not going to bother installing it. That's where we get in trouble. So uninstall both, install QuickTime by itself as a separate download, and then install iTunes, okay?
Great.
Good luck.
I'll give it a shot.
Yeah, good luck. Yeah, call me back if it doesn't work, Gilbert. Wish I could find that link. I wonder if Apple stopped doing that. Because that's really, if you've already got QuickTime or if you're using Windows, I think installing them separately just really seems to work better. I'll keep looking. We'll find it before the hour's out. 1218, Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio.
Fiercely family-friendly, Dr. Laura, Monday, noon to 3.
KFI, AM 640.
KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy at KFI. I was a little confused now. I seem to remember that you could get QuickTime, or rather iTunes without QuickTime. It's vice versa. So if you want QuickTime without iTunes, which is actually harder to find than I thought, you go to apple.com/QuickTime/download/win.html. So that's where you go to get just QuickTime without iTunes. Get that. Install that. 7.1.3 is the current version. Then download iTunes. Now, it has QuickTime built in, but once it sees you've got QuickTime, it won't try to do a separate install. And I think that's the... I'd love to hear from Windows users who have had problems but fixed them with iTunes. Because I hear a lot of stories like this. And, a lot of people want to use an iPod with Windows. And I don't think Apple would intentionally be sabotaging Windows. It doesn't make sense. So what's the story, Morning Glory? Ethan, Dana Point, KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello?
Hello, Ethan!
Hi. I have a question. My computer recently had a virus.
Yeah.
And my dad got rid of that.
Good man.
But it seems that when he was in safe mode and deleting files that the virus had gotten and other files that seemed suspicious, something happened, and it seems now, you can't drag icons on the desktop or anywhere.
Oh, interesting.
Can't drag icons.
What happens? The icons are there, but you just can't click them and drag them?
You can't drag them.
You can click them, you can open them, but you can't drag them.
Yeah, but also sometimes image and music files, if you double-click it, nothing will happen, so you have to right-click and say open.
Okay.
And when you go to the start menu,
yeah,
the search doesn't open.
Okay, sounds like your Explorer is messed up.
Yeah.
Now, this is often the problem when you remove viruses. The way viruses and spyware get so sticky these days is by putting their little hooks into system files. They're like parasites. Removing them often damages things. I would say what's damaged is Windows Explorer. So probably the virus had hooked into it, and your dad deleted something key to get rid of the virus or damaged a key system file. Windows XP?
Yes.
Okay. I'm going to give you a little lecture first, and then yes, I'll tell you, and then I'll help you. Lecture first, then I help you. Your dad probably does the same thing. All dads are the same. So the lecture is, and it's really for everybody, not just for you. The lecture is that once your system has been compromised, once a bad guy's gotten onto your system, there's no way to assure yourself that it is now clean. There's a likelihood, sometimes a very high likelihood, that you still have bad stuff on there. That's how viruses and spyware work these days. They open up your system and they let others in. And because your system's been modified, you can't trust your system to tell you it's clean. That's what rootkits do. They modify the system and hide themselves so that nothing can find them. So really, when you get a virus or when you get a bad spyware infestation, ultimately the best fix, the only fix that can be trusted, is a complete Windows reinstall. Now, I don't blame you. Nobody wants to do that. But just so you know, there's a potential, maybe a somewhat of a high potential, that you've got other stuff on there. And then an antivirus might not see it because your system isn't reporting it properly anymore because the virus got in there and modified your system. What I would suggest doing now to repair it, well, what I'd suggest is reinstalling Windows, but the next best thing, or at least the attempt to get it working, is to one run the Windows XP repair system. Now, I got to go for news, so I'm going to hang up on you, but keep listening. After the news, I'm going to tell you the super secret way to repair Windows. It's not what you think. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. It's 1229. Lisa Osborne's in the KFI News Center.
John and Ken, Saturday starting at 3. Now you get 20% more John and Ken in every bunch. John and Ken, Saturday starting at 3.
KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI AM 640. Let's see. So, the very super secret, little known, but highly useful Windows XP reinstall. For many years, when you were using Windows 95, 98 ME, it was a simple thing. You just put the Windows installer disk in and you'd run the installer, and it would be smart enough just to overwrite the files that were missing or damaged and leave the rest alone. Certainly wouldn't impinge on your data or anything. It was a really, frankly, a useful way to fix those early versions of Windows. It stopped working in XP. You can't just run the installer. Or can you? Turns out you can, but you have to be bold. You have to be brave. You have to say yes to the EULA. So here's what you do. And you need a Windows install disk. And by the way, boy, it makes me mad that so many computers now come without a Windows install disk. It's just a necessity. If you have the choice, even if it costs, you know, $20 extra, get the Windows install disk. Microsoft doesn't like that, you know, because it makes it easier to pirate the thing. Well, too bad. You need it. And shame on people who sell PCs without Windows install disks. I mean, true install disks. So you need a true install disk for this to work. I know many of you don't. So, but if you do, what you do is you put it in, you boot to it, and you run it as if you're going to install XP. Now, this is the scary part. You go right through. Don't press R for recovery console. That's not going to do you any good. That doesn't do nothing. In fact, it messes things up. You're going to continue past that point, just like you're installing Windows. It's going to give you the end user license agreement. You say yes to that. Keep going right up to the point where it says, I'm ready to install Windows. Now, here's the key, and be careful here. Do not format and install Windows or you're going to lose everything. Look closely, and it will say at the bottom of the screen, press R to repair an existing installation. That's what you want. You have to get Windows all the way up to the point where it's looking at your drive and saying, oh, you've already got it, and then it will pop up this press R to repair. Now, that's pretty much the same thing as we've always used on 95, 98, and ME. It goes through the installation and it repairs missing or damaged files. So I'm hoping that's going to fix Ethan's problem because, you know, that virus removal kind of tore the heart out of his Windows. So he needs to replace it. If it doesn't, Ethan, and even if it does, my recommendation is back up your data and format the drive, erase the drive, and install Windows. Because until you do that, you can never be sure the bad guys didn't leave a little calling card behind. Let's go all the way to New York City. Gary on the line. Welcome to KFI in Los Angeles. Hello, Gary.
Hi, Leo. I have a couple of questions. The first one is there any advantage to putting in a video card if I'm using mostly Word?
You mean like getting a fancy video card instead of the motherboard video you've got?
Yeah.
Absolutely not.
None?
The fancy video cards are for one thing only, high resolution 3D first person shooter gaming.
All right.
You know, Doom 3 and Halo 3 or 2 and, you know, Battlefield and Command and Conquer, that kind of thing.
And I'm thinking of putting in a sound card because of hiss from the motherboard. Is a USB, or should I just go ahead and get a PDA?
Yeah, you know, if you hear hiss, I don't know if a sound card is going to get better, make it any better. The motherboard sound is, in general, as good as a sound card these days. The problem is you're trying to generate sound in a noisy, RF-filled environment that's inside your PC case. So you kind of said the right thing, which is the best way to get the best quality audio out of your computer is to get digital out of your computer using USB and have the conversion happen outside the computer. That's basically what a USB speaker does. When you plug it into the USB port, now that plug is getting ones and zeros from the computer, not analog sound. So there's no noise introduced at all. Then it goes to a lump. It's like a python that ate a rat. There's a lump in that cable, right? And that lump contains the circuitry, the DSP chip that converts the bits into analog signals, which then continue on down the wire to the speakers. The farther that lump is away from your computer, the quieter it's going to be because there's no RF. There's no noise being introduced. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, so you think maybe one of those USB cards might be...
They're definitely better. I think I don't think you can get good audio on a card that's sitting inside your computer. It's just too noisy in there, especially now when we have processors that are cycling at, you know, 2 gigahertz and 3 gigahertz. It's like a little microwave oven in there. You know, I mean, just think of the RF.
Cook eggs in there, huh?
You could cook eggs in there. Not just the heat, but the RF that's coming off of that thing. I mean, it's a transmitter.
All right. Thank you.
Sure, Gary. Thank you for how you listen on the internet or the podcast?
Yeah, on the internet.
Wonderful. I really appreciate that. Thanks a lot.
Good show.
Take care. I love it that we have listeners all over the world, all over the country from the stream of the radio show, KFIAM640.com. And then you may have noticed we get callers from Germany, Australia, Caribbean, South America, Mexico, all over the world. And they're probably listening to the podcast, which is available from KFIAM640.com or from my site, leo.am. I think that's the best thing about the internet. It's global. It's a little frustrating, I have to say, because, I have this podcast network, twit.tv. That's what I do during the week. I have 16 different audio and video programs distributed solely through the internet. And about a quarter of our audience is outside the U.S. That's a lot, right? But when we sell ads or try to sell ads, we have to take those people out because there is no ad agency yet anywhere in the world that is global. They're all national because until like a minute ago, you couldn't buy a global advertisement. Think about it. If you bought an ad on NBC, was it global? No, it's on NBC in the U.S. Doesn't even go to Canada. There was nothing you could buy that was global. So now all of a sudden, there's this brand new medium comes along with listeners all over the world. And there are plenty of global companies. You know, you'd think if I could get a Sony ad that they'd be just as happy to have a listener in Japan or Brazil or Australia or France as they are in the U.S., but they won't pay you for it because the agency is U.S. And that's all they care about. Now, I think in the back of their minds, they're going, hey, yeah, we get all this other stuff for free. The world is changing and the internet is changing it dramatically. And it's very hard for businesses with their existing models that are really, you know, stuck in cement to change. And that's what you're seeing with the radio industry, the music industry, the TV industry, the advertising, everything. They're all scrambling to play catch up because it's changing so fast. The good news from our point of view as listeners and as creators too. First of all, we get a much, you know, you who needs a shortwave radio anymore? You can hear radio and content from all over the world. You know, we benefit too, a huge variety, but also you can make it. You can make your own and publish it too, which adds even more to the richness and the variety. That's really an exciting time. The phrase that's used by the digerati, that's a terrible word. That, you know, it's the tech people, is user generated content or UGC. Now, is that the worst phrase you ever? We got to come up with something better than that. But that's what it is. It's the stuff you see on YouTube. You can put a video on YouTube and be seen by millions of people all over the world. In fact, YouTube's kind of got a problem selling ads on its site because in some cases, 60% of the views come from outside the U.S. 60%. My friends who do the Ask a Ninja podcast, which if you haven't seen is just hysterical, askaninja.com. They also put their videos up on YouTube where they often get hundreds of thousands, if not millions of views. More than half are from overseas, so they can't sell ads on the 100%. They can only sell ads on the 40%. That's got to hurt. They're doing such a great show, such a funny show, loved all over the world, and it's treated as kind of a local phenomenon by advertisers. But watch, boy, when that shifts, it's going to shift fast, and it's going to change a lot of people's ideas. And, it's very good for us in the United States. Just a little, don't listen, you global listeners, but it's very good for us in the United States because we still, one of the few areas the U.S. still reigns supreme is in creation of content. Hollywood still is the foremost creator of movies in the world. I mean, there's Bollywood and China's making a lot of movies, but, the big films, the important films come from Hollywood, right? It's true of a lot of content, music, podcasts. So it's a real opportunity for us in the U.S. And we've got fewer and fewer folks, fewer and fewer areas where the U.S. is paramount to kind of take advantage of our skill set, to find an audience, to find a market. It's good. 1248, 12 away from one, Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio.
No hairspray, no makeup, no teleprompter. Real KFI News.
KFI, AM 640.
On the other hand, I am wearing hairspray, makeup, and using a teleprompter. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. Old habits die hard. Actually, we're going to dump the teleprompter on the TV show. We're revamping Call for Help. As I said, shooting it in high def. We're going to move it to Vancouver. And we are going to dump the prompter because I don't like teleprompters. It kind of gets in between you and the audience. You can always tell when somebody's reading instead of talking to you, right? No teleprompters here. Eric in Sherman Oaks, welcome. KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hello, Eric.
Hello.
Welcome.
Thank you. I've got a PC and an iPod, the 60-gig iPod.
Yes.
And it is impossible so far for me to transfer AVI, MPEG, and MOVs that are on my PC onto my iPod and play.
And the reason is that there's a very, very, very specific format that they have to be in before iTunes will see them. And, of course, until iTunes can see them, you can't put them on the iPod.
Right. So, I've tried Vidora and
Vidora does not. Vidora does not work for you?
No. It's great for transferring DVDs.
Oh, well, you need the special. There's a special version of Vidora. You have the Vidora iPod converter?
Yes.
Oh, you have got that. And will it read the AVIs?
It reads them, but when I transfer over, the image will come up, but the sound won't.
Oh.
And I just don't know how to do it. I've gone to all of these iPod forums, and I've been to the Mac store. Nobody's been able to help me with this.
Yeah. The reason is so you get the video but not the audio almost. Is that always the case or?
Well, most of the time I get nothing.
Nothing.
And nothing.
Okay.
It just won't transfer over.
This all comes down to the fact that an AVI is not an AVI. An AVI really is just like MOV, it's just it talks about what the player is. It's a format, but it's not how it was compressed.
Okay. How about MPEG then?
MPEG talks more about the compression. In fact, you can play an MPEG in Windows Media Player. The AVI file doesn't say anything about how it was compressed. And so you have different codecs. That's a compressor decompressor. For instance, DivX is a codec. So you can have an AVI that's been compressed in DivX, right? So you need to know what the codec is. And then you need a program like Vidora, which is a pretty good one, but a program that understands all these codecs and can convert it into the MPEG 4 codec, which is what the iTunes and the iPod need. iTunes and iPod can only read two different. Well, actually, that's not strictly true. iTunes is a little more flexible than the iPod is, but the iPod, the iPod can only read two different formats: MPEG 4 and H.264, which is a variant of MPEG 4. Nothing else.
Okay, I have right now a file in my iTunes that says MPEG 4 video file, and it will not play on my iPod.
But there's more than just the MPEG 4. It also has to be a certain resolution, a certain frame rate. So the iPod is not the ideal video player because it's very fussy about what it'll play back. The reason they did that is frankly, it's a limited. The hardware is limited, and they didn't want to put in a lot of capabilities. Probably the processor wasn't capable of much more either. If you want, there are great players like the Arcos that can play, the Creative Zen can play many, many, many more formats. But they're bigger, heavier, more expensive. Actually, not more expensive. Apple's pretty pricey. But they are bigger and heavier. And And they have more processing power, and they have more capabilities built into them. The issue is, and it's, you know, there's no silver bullet. I usually recommend video or as iPod converter, but you've got to make sure that you've got codecs that it can read and convert to the proper form. And if you're not getting them in the right, exact right form, then it's not going to work. I suspect the problem is that Videora is not, you don't have the right codecs for Videora to begin with, so it can't read it. If it can read it, it should be able to convert it. And it may not be perfect. Let me see if I can find a better program for you. That's the one I've been recommending, and obviously it's not doing the job. Let's find a convert. What's the best? I know a lot of them, like iSquint and Handbrake on the Mac, but I don't know what the best Mac video conversion program is for Windows. Tell me. 1-800-520-1KFI. Let's find something. Is there anything better than Videora? 1-800-520-1534. News is next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. It's 12:59. Lisa Osborne's in the KFI News Center.
Saturday, December 16th.
I'm Lisa Osborne, KFI News.
Thank you, Lisa. KFI AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI 107. Now in the afternoon, I'll be here till 2 in the Dr. Dean Adele show. Then it's a fresh John and Ken from 3 to 5 this afternoon. I will continue to take calls, though, after 2. We're pre-taping, so if you can call between 2 and 4, that would be a great thing. This will be for the Christmas Eve program. 1-800-520-1KFI. 1-800-520-1534, now and through 4 this afternoon. Dave in San Pedro, welcome. KFI, the tech guy, Leo Laporte here. Hey, Dave.
Hi. I've got a problem with a backup where I think my photos and some of the documents have been corrupted, and it seems to be spreading.
Okay.
Let me just give you the background. About a year ago, I got this error message that said, this program has been damaged by a bad sector of the hard drive or a virus. Please reinstall it.
Okay.
I had a place do that, and they supposedly backed everything up. And later on, when I looked at it, looking at particularly for photos, all I've got are these icons instead of documents or photos. And I can't seem to open them with any kind of a program.
How big, if you get information on the file, is it 0K or is it large? If you actually look at, you know, get the properties of the file or look in the details.
I could take a look.
Yeah, because that'll tell you if there's data there.
Oh, okay. Can you give me a second to take a quick look?
Yeah, sure. It may be damaged or it may be that there's nothing at all. In that case, the company who did this didn't do such a good job. On the other hand, if there's data in there, then there probably is a picture in there somewhere. The thing that concerns me is the virus that you got. It's prevalent a year ago or so, a number of viruses that propagated by modifying JPEGs. They would copy the virus into the beginning of the JPEG, damaging the photo permanently and spreading the virus. So what is the verdict? Is there data there?
Let me just go to another. I'm having some trouble opening this thing up, but it's in my photos now, so I'll open that one and see what that says.
Yeah, and the problem is if you it sounds like they didn't get any data. You know, that would be my guess. But if they did get data and it doesn't open, then it sounds like it's damaged or may even have that virus at the beginning of it.
Okay, if I right click on one of those icons, for example, you're looking for properties.
Select properties. And then how big is that file?
Let's see. Size on this particular one is 8.00 KB.
That's nothing. That's effectively zero. 8 kilobytes is too small for a photo.
Okay.
So look at some more. They didn't get a picture. They didn't get anything. They screwed up.
Looking at another one, the size is 78.8 kilobytes.
That could be a picture, but not a very good quality picture. I mean, if these were taken with a digital camera and they're decent quality, they'll be at several hundred kilobytes at least.
I've got just so many of them that I'm afraid that I've lost something that I'm never going to be able to retrieve. And is there any possible way to open these and get them back?
Not if there's 8K in it. No, there's nothing there.
Uh-huh. What about anything else?
Well, look at them. I mean, it just depends. I mean, it sounds like whoever backed it up didn't.
Well, here's one here. Another one. It says size 141 kb.
Yeah, maybe there's something there, but it concerns me that some of these, that the sizes are all over the place. Some of them are clearly too small to actually have a photo in there. You'd concentrate your rescue efforts on the ones that are larger, but none of them so far sound large enough to actually contain a photo. Not a good quality one. You're out of luck, I think. If there's no data in the file, you can't recover it. If there's data in the file, well, you might be able to recover it. There are photo recovery programs. I guess the best thing to try is go to PCRecovery.de, not .com, but .de. It's a German company. This is a free program. It's designed to recover JPEGs from damaged... Oh, I guess that's the wrong address. Whoops, maybe PCRecover.de. It's designed to restore... I'm sure I have the right URL before I give it out. You always have to be careful. PCRecover. I guess it's PCInspector.de. My apologies. PCInspector.de. It's designed to recover data from damaged compact flash and smart media in the camera, but it will also work on the hard drive. It at least knows about JPEGs, because that's what you need, something that understands images. But I'll be honest, it doesn't sound like you've got images. Sounds like the guy who did the backup didn't do it. Don Agora, or a virus got on it. Don in Agora Hills. Hello, Don.
Hello, how are you?
Great, welcome to KFI.
Great. I have a question. My parents are really big on the Skype program.
Is it Skype? Great. I want to do the little Skype dance here, because I just love Skype, too. Woohoo!
Well, and they have a cheap $30 webcam.
And it looks like...
It looks like a little cable that comes up with a little camera on the top.
Yep.
And... it does really bad pictures.
I bet it does. Is this a Mac or Windows?
Yes, it's a Mac.
Okay.
And so my brother and sisters and I want to go in and get them a good webcam so they can talk to all their family all over the world.
Great
idea. And I was just wondering what your opinion was. Is the EyeSight the best?
EyeSight's very good. Now, if they have a camcorder, a DV camcorder, they can use that.
No, I thought of that, and they don't have one.
Okay. That's the best, because that's, of course, an expensive camera with a good lens, and it's going to give you the best images.
Right.
To tell anybody, that's one of the nice things about the Mac. It has FireWire. All Macs have FireWire, and they will recognize a camcorder, and Skype and iChat and all those programs will just see them. Now, on the Windows, you have to buy a driver, but on the Mac, no, it works. Okay. Next thing is, let's buy one. And yeah, the EyeSight is very good. The EyeSight's a little greenish to me, but... I think they've actually improved them quite a bit. I have two of the original EyeSights, and I think they've gotten a lot better. I'll tell you, the EyeSight built into the MacBook and the iMac is one of the better cameras out there. So I think they probably have the same technology in the standalone EyeSight now.
That's what somebody else told me. They said, just get them a new computer with the EyeSight, with the camera built in.
Well, that's expensive.
That's a little more expensive than just the camera.
No, just get them an EyeSight. They'll find it's the easiest to use. It has a built-in microphone. It's very straightforward. Very good image. Auto focus. Auto light balance. It's a nice camera. On Windows, I recommend now the new Logitech Quick Cam Ultra is very good. It's for people who are on Windows, but since your folks are on Mac, get them the EyeSight.
Okay, great.
I think you'll like it. And I'll tell you, Skype, spectacular. And it's free, skype.com. It does video now on Mac and Windows. And, on the TV show I do for years, ever since 1998, we've always taken what we called webcam calls or netcam calls. The idea was... hey, it's TV. We're taking phone calls just as I do on the radio show, but we need pictures because it's TV. Oh, well, wait a minute. A lot of people have cameras. And tell you, in 98, it was pretty primitive. Looked pretty bad. Well, fast forward to 2006 and Skype, and we can go full screen video, and it looks as if it's a TV show. I mean, the quality is spectacular. These guys who do Skype are brilliant. Technically. And I think that they continually improve this product. And by now, there's no competition. AIM, Yahoo, MSN, iChat, way distant. in the pack. See you, see me, I visit, all of these solutions way down the list. Skype is it, and it's free. SKYPE.com. It has chat. It has audio telephony. They, by the way, they just announced they're going to offer, for, you know, they were offering free calls to North America, anywhere in North America, to any phone in North America. So, see, the way Skype works, you're calling, usually you call another computer that's running Skype, but they have something called Skype Out that allows you to call a telephone. And for most of this year, they were offering free calls anywhere in North America. That deal's going away, but the replacement deal is nearly as good for $30 a year. I think it's less. I think it's $14 if you do it before the end of the year. Unlimited calling anywhere in North America. Wow. To any phone. So it's still free if you're calling another computer. And if you're going to use video, obviously you're calling another computer. But you can also use it, and I know more and more people are, as their phone. They're using Skype, you know, instead of Vonage or, you know, Packet 8 or even, you know, SBC. That's their phone. It's got answering machine capability. You can have it forward to a real phone if you're out, away from the computer. A lot of advantages. I think Skype is, you know, it's now owned by eBay. They bought it for billions of dollars. And everybody laughed when they bought it for, I think it was $3.5 billion. Everybody said, wow, crazy. But no, you know, I think this is going to be big. Now, how are they going to make money on it? I'm not sure. I don't know. At $14 a pop, if you can make enough money. But let's take advantage of it now while we can. If you have a PC, the Logitech QuickCam Ultra, excellent quality. If you have a Mac, any DV camcorder, or if you don't have a DV camcorder, which is the best, EyeSight would be the next best thing. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio.
Stimulate yourself all weekend long, KFI, AM 640.
More stimulating weekends.
124 KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI. We are going to continue to take calls now through 4 this afternoon. So continue to call 1-800-520-1534, 1-800-520-1KFI, and I will keep taking your calls as long as you call them. From Manhattan Beach, Ed is on the line. Hello, Ed. Welcome to KFI.
How are you, Leo?
Excellent.
Good. I got a question for you. I've been, since day one, a Netscape user because it came with the disk that my very first setup disk that my very first ISP sent me.
Right.
And I'm used to it, and
yeah,
I like it.
Yeah, it's good. Nothing wrong with it.
The problem I'm having is the latest update I have from them, 7.1. There's certain websites that it started having trouble with.
Yeah.
So I looked at Firefox, downloaded it, tried it. Certain things I didn't like about it. And I noticed on the Mozilla website that there was this thing called SeaMonkey.
Right. That's basically the old Mozilla browser.
Well, for somebody that's used to Netscape, it's perfect because it's almost exactly like Netscape,
right,
except they fixed all the problems.
Yeah, exactly. Because it's in much more active development. I think it's a very good choice. SeaMonkey is the old Mozilla suite that was based on Netscape.
Yeah.
And vice versa, really. A lot of the advances in Netscape that AOL made were taken from the Mozilla code base.
Yeah. And I was just wondering if you... well, first of all, the only thing I don't like about it is the name.
But, yeah, I agree. It's a terrible name.
Other than that,
just
I
add
was
water.
Just wondering if
they're alive. Just add water. They're alive.
Yeah. I was just wondering if there's any particular problems with it
vis-a-vis
vulnerability to hackers or anything like that. It sounds like from the Mozilla website that the version I downloaded has just been updated with a few fixes for things like that.
Yeah, no, I would absolutely get behind it. I think it's very good. No reason not to use it. They keep it up to date. It's in constant development.
Terrific.
It's really the Firefox is the simple stripped down version if you just want the browser, and if you want all of the features that Netscape came with, including mail, they call it Thunderbird instead of Netscape mail. It's very similar, including the composer, which allows you to design web pages. It's excellent. I have no reason not to recommend SeaMonkey. And time goes by, the advantages that are in Firefox are migrated over to SeaMonkey. So you.
Yeah. Firefox did not seem to be the browser half of SeaMonkey, and Thunderbird doesn't seem to be the male half of Sea Monkey.
Well,
it seems like there's enough differences, and I frankly don't like the differences.
Right, the code base diverged, so they're not the same. Same heritage.
Yeah. Okay.
But they're not the same. So they're three different forks of the same code base.
Okay.
I think that Sea Monkey uses the Gecko rendering engine, which is really what is most important. Is the underlying page drawing capability of Firefox is, I think, in Sea Monkey. But
okay.
The interface is what you care about, and the interface is definitely much more like Netscape. Yeah, Thunderbird is no longer Netscape mail. They say, again, same code base, but they've diverged quite a bit.
There was some housekeeping issues I liked about Netscape.
Where Netscape went wrong to me is it got very commercial.
Well, one of the things is they were pushing a lot of, you know, when
yeah.
you download the latest version,
get this, get that.
They were pushing. Yeah. They were pushing signing up for Netscape and
right.
signing up for AOL
right.
Messenger and all this other junk that
They backed down. AOL realized, I think, that was a negative, and they don't. It's not as bad as it was. There was a period of time where Netscape was just one big ad, but I think it's gotten better. Absolutely, highly recommended. I think AOL is trying to keep Netscape in good shape, but frankly, the development is much more active on the Sea Monkey side.
Yeah. I've never heard you mention Sea Monkey. I've heard you mention Firefox and Thunderbird, and I just thought for
right.
any other listeners out there who maybe are still using Netscape, that if you want to upgrade to something better,
you bet,
with minimum grief.
You bet.
I mean, the grief was almost non-existent.
Yeah, it's basically Netscape.
Yeah. I'm glad to hear that.
Two thumbs up, Ed.
Okay, terrific.
All right.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks
Leo.
For the call. I appreciate it. Yeah. In fact, they've got a Sunbird project now. They're working on a calendar. All of this comes from Mozilla.org. As far as I'm concerned, anything Mozilla.org does is okay. They're great guys. I know many of them, smart developers. They stumbled a little with Firefox 2, I think. There's some reliability issues. But they care a lot about users, a lot. And as a result, they make good products and they listen to their users. And if they make a mistake, they fix it. And security is very high priority for them. It's at mozilla.org, and you'll find both Sea Monkey and Firefox and Thunderbird and Sunbird and all the other stuff. There's also now a new one, Minimo, which is a little browser for portable devices. They don't stop. They just keep coming up with great stuff. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. 129 now, and that means Lisa Osborne's in the KFI News Center.
Live streaming 24/7, KFI, AM640.com.
.139 KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI. Here till 2 in the Dr. Dina Dell Show. But boy, we don't stop then. No, no, no. I will keep taking calls through 4 o'clock this afternoon. So keep them coming in. 1-800-520-1-KFI. That's my phone number. Jake in Florida, welcome to KFI.
Hey, Leo, I have a question about installing the new Vista.
Vista!
Business
yes.
edition on my computer.
Okay.
What happened was I have a Gigabit K8U motherboard.
Okay.
And it says that the serial ATA drivers I have don't work.
Ah!
And what happened is something like I installed it, and then I go to, it has like the boot selector. I select current Windows version, and it tries to load Vista, and the little bar goes for a second, then it crashes and blue screens on me.
I'm surprised it was able to install if it didn't have drivers for that hard drive.
It just won't run.
Yeah. That's weird that it could see it well enough to put something on it. Did it really go through the whole process, copying files and all that?
No, all it did was I opened it in Windows in XP.
Yeah.
And I did the install that you can do with an XP without restarting first.
Right.
Then once it restarts to go back
then
into the
it never does. Yeah, okay. So
it
in other words, you have drivers in XP, but as soon as it tries to run Vista, it can't.
Yeah.
So can you choose XP in the bootloader and run XP?
Yeah, I can go back into XP fine.
Yeah. This is, look, first of all, it's not out for a little bit, January 31st. So what you've got to do is check with Microsoft to see if they're, or Gigabyte, and see if they're going to have drivers for that, those SATA card. What SATA chipset is it? Do you know?
I have no clue.
Yeah. So that's what you got to find out. And that's, you know, I have to say, Vista, they've done a very good job of driver support. I've been able to install it on a lot of existing PC hardware without any issues, including many with SATA drives. But maybe Gigabyte's doing something a little strange, or maybe they're using an oddball chipset and there isn't yet support from Microsoft. The good news is that's what Microsoft's doing between now and January 31st, is writing drivers like crazy. So I guess the best thing, how did you get a copy of it?
I know somebody that works for a company that got the business edition.
Yeah, so what you got to do is, if you have an MSDN membership, and that's the kind of legit way to get a copy of it, you can go back to MSDN and look for those drivers. They're constantly putting new drivers up. Since you don't...
Oh, wait, I'm at the Gigabit site now. Other people have been having the problem.
Yeah, so...
And there are drivers for it. And
hey!
So now I got to go uninstall what I have now. And then reinstall it?
Probably. The
good, so I got to repartition with partition magic?
No. I'd continue to just do it on top of the existing install.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't think you're going to have any trouble. Good news. And you're going to see that happening, not a lot, but you're going to see that happening with other devices. I mean, anytime there's a new operating system, you've got to write new drivers for all of the hardware. Although I have to say, I have used a few XP drivers that have worked fine in Vista. They probably shouldn't, and I probably shouldn't be doing it. But for instance, on my laptop, the Synaptics mouse driver, which as far as I know is just an XP driver, doesn't say Vista anywhere in the documentation, works fine with Vista. So XP drivers can conceivably work within Vista. They haven't changed the driver model significantly. That's Vista 32-bit. 64-bit is another matter entirely. And they're going to, that is the version of Vista that is the most secure, but also the least compatible. And if you're trying to install that, you're going to have all sorts of trouble. All sorts of trouble. Ash, Los Angeles, KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Leo.
Hey, Ash.
I have a problem with a girlfriend that doesn't trust my ability to figure out whether consumer electronics are good or not.
She has to have Leo say so?
Yes.
Oh, my goodness, Ash. You've got bigger problems than I can help you with. All right. All right. What is it now? What do you want to buy, Ash?
Well, we have to replace our remote for our TV for the second time, which is a really good TV, but for some reason the buttons wear out. I don't know. Maybe it's a male thing where I'm pressing the buttons too much or something. I don't know.
Does she even touch the remote?
Barely.
Yeah, it's a guy's job. That's a man's job. There's certain things we have to do. We have to empty the trash, change the oil, change the remote. Those are the three things. That's it.
Yep. So the remote's going to cost $65. So I started to look.
Get a better remote. Get a Harmony.
Right. Yeah, well, that's what I was looking at.
Yeah, get a Harmony.
So what's up with that?
What's up with that Harmony thing? Well, Logitech bought them. They were a neat little company. They made a programmable remote that was really programmable. I think Logitech's done a good job with it. I think the 880 is probably the one you want, but that's an expensive remote.
That's what I'm looking at. It's fine. Yeah. I don't care about expense as long as it works.
Oh, does it work?
Yeah.
It's very, very good. Here's what you get. First of all, it's programmable, so it works not just with your TV, but with all of your AV equipment.
Okay.
You program it not by, the old way of you point one remote at the other and you press a button and you hold it and then it blinks four times and you press another button and you hold it and it blinks.
That's why I didn't want to get it.
I hate that, and nobody wants to do that anymore. The Harmony's cool because it has a USB port. You plug the USB port into your computer. You surf to the Harmony website. You actually create an account on the Harmony website, and you describe your setup. You tell it all the equipment you've got. You push a button. It downloads all the programming into your remote. In fact, better than that, you can even say, okay, if I want to watch Oprah, then you need to turn on this, this, and this. You know, the satellite dish, the decoder, the AV receiver, and the TV. Set the TV to channel 4. Set the recorder to blah, blah. And it does it all. So now you have an Oprah button. And so that's really where it's nice. It's Windows and Mac. I know you're a Mac user, Ash, so it's Windows and Mac. It is rechargeable, which I like because, frankly, who wants to keep buying batteries? And this is the kind of remote that is going to use a lot of power, so you're going to keep it in the dock.
Okay.
Feel it in your hand first, okay? So make sure that you are – it's a little bigger and, I like what – Logitech's kind of made it more hourglass-shaped, and I think that that's a good thing.
Okay.
Yeah, but I think these are really great remotes. They're pricey is the only negative, But if,
yeah, that's
but,
okay. Well, it's going to replace, like I said, I've spent $130 on the same
right.
time, and I'm about to spend another $65, so that's $130. This is the second one that I bought after
well,
the original.
Now, I don't know what you're doing to your remote, and I don't know that the Harmony would be more robust, but
I think it was just a fault in the
yeah.
design.
No,
really
I think
do.
These are really nicely done. I think that they've really answered a lot of the issues people have with programmable remotes, and you know, not only does it eliminate the six remote controls on your sofa arm,
right.
but it also solves the girlfriend problem because I know my wife says to me, you know, I just want to watch TV. She almost is in tears. I just want to watch TV and I can't. And I said, well, honey, it's very simple. You just have to turn on the satellite box. You have to change the receiver to input 4. That's the thing. She called me when I was in Toronto this week and said, I pressed something and all I'm seeing is... I said, oh, yeah, you press input 4. She said, oh, input 4, eh? Well, how could I not have known that? What is there a gene? Is that what it is?
There must be.
There must be a boy gene that we have. I don't know. I don't want to be sexist. I know there are women who are probably much better than their husbands at remote controlling.
Oh, yeah, we do know that, yeah.
But they're few and far between. I don't know what it is.
I get the same calls, though, when I'm away.
Honey, I just want to watch TV. What have you done here? In fact, there was a great episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm all around that. Ash, that's I highly recommend it. Tell your girlfriend it's okay to get the Logitech. Leo gives it his seal of approval. It's a man's remote that even a woman can love. I like it, too. 147, 13 away from 2. Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI. AM 640, more stimulating talk radio.
Dream Girls, the dazzling musical, shines on the silver screen starting December 25th at the historic Regency Lido Theater in Newport Beach. Purchase advance tickets at RegencyMovies.com or to win a pair of tickets, visit KFIAM640.com.
High-speed internet, everybody needs it. We just talked about one more thing you can do with high-speed internet. Program your remote controls. I mean, really, the world is coming to the internet. And if you're on dial-up, you're missing it. Or if you're paying more than $12.95 a month, you're overpaying. DSL Extreme, my internet service provider, now offers high-speed internet for the lowest price I've ever seen, $12.95 a month. It's not just low because of the monthly fee. It's low because there's no setup fee. There's no charge for the modem. There's no charge for 24-hour free tech support from local guys who care about you. There are no additional services you have to sign up for. The phone company will pay you, make you say, oh, you got to have long distance. You got to have this and that. No. Just $12.95 a month for the first year for new customers. Certain restrictions do apply. Call 866-2-GET-NET, 866-2-GET-NET. You can also sign up online at dslextreme.com. These guys are my internet service providers, so I'm not just blowing smoke here. I really know how good they are. Call 866-2-GET-NET to get high-speed internet for only $12.95 a month. Only from DSL Extreme.
KFI News, Fox News, team to bring you the big stories. KFI AM 640.
KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI. I mentioned that I've been using a new search engine. That's kind of a misnomer, really, because it's the same old search engine. I'm a Google guy, and there's nothing better than Google, really. I'm going to keep using Google, but now I use Google in a new form. Aha. They've done something interesting, and there hasn't been a lot of publicity about this. I don't know if many people know about it. It's called SearchMash, SearchMash.com. Now, if you're using Internet Explorer 7 or you're using Firefox 2, you can easily add it to your make it your default search. On Firefox, once you go to searchmash.com, it'll put a little red light saying you could add me in the search box. You just add it, and it becomes your default search. What it is it's Google with Ajax goodness. You wouldn't know it's Google to look at it. But if you click Terms of Service, it says SearchMash is a website operated by Google. It's a Google search, but what they're doing, I think it must be a lab thing. What they're doing is trying out a new kind of searching. The results are the same. It's just that the display is different. First of all, you see all the results, related results, in a panel to your right. So they've got images. You know what they don't have is Google Groups, but they have blogs, images, a Wikipedia result, which I find very handy. Often, if I do a search, I just want the Wikipedia result. Just give me the information. The other thing, it's little things that make a difference. For instance, anywhere on the search page, if you just start typing it, it knows if you're typing in the search page, you're entering a new query. So it goes automatically to the new query. You can press a button that turns off all the details, hide details. And they have a little link that at the bottom says more results. So you can get a bunch of results on a page. It just adds more results. Search Mash. You know, if you're a Google user, and I think we all are, try Search Mash, searchmash.com. I think you'll like it. It's Googlicious. And Ajaxy, which is the new, you know, buzz phrase on the internet. 1-800-520-1KFI. I'm giving out the number because even though Dean Adell's here in just a few minutes, I will keep taking calls now till 4 in the afternoon. So keep the phones ringing. We're pre-recording for our Christmas Eve program. John in San Juan Capistrano, welcome to KFI.
Thanks, Leo. How are you doing today?
Great. Thanks for calling.
Hey, unlike your last caller, I haven't had TV in 13 years. And
wow.
Recently...
Your brain, it's so firm and fully formed. I've never seen such a beautiful brain. No mush here.
It makes for good family time.
Yeah, I every few years get rid of the cable. And we're currently in a non-cable mode, and I just love it. I just love it.
Well, I was looking at some of these live TV on your PC programs. Uh-huh. Have you seen those, and do you have any recommendations?
Well, so you have an antenna, you can get broadcast signals, or you have a cable or something like that?
All I have is the internet connection. I don't even know that I would need.
So you're thinking you want to watch live TV. Well, see, there are different things you can do. If you want to watch like Channel 7, you need an antenna and a TV capture card. A tuner card. If you want to watch internet streaming television, you can, but not the local channels don't do it. But for instance, you can watch many shows on CBS and NBC. They put on their website. You could download many shows from BitTorrent. That's kind of illegal, but you can also buy shows on iTunes, Xbox Live. More and more TVs make it to the internet. And if you want to watch kind of non-standard TV, take a look at the Democracy Player. It is a very cool idea. It's basically exactly what you're talking about, which is turning the Democracy Player is designed to kind of give you a kind of a TV guide interface on your screen to online TV. It's getdemocracy.com. But the kind of TV you're going to get is not, it's not Oprah.
Right. Well, actually, the only kind of TV I'm really interested in is getting some football every once in a while. I live in a house full of girls. So.
See, that's different. That's... The NFL is not going to be broadcasting on the internet anytime soon.
Right.
They want you to pay and watch ads and stuff.
Right. And so I was looking at these ads for these live TV on PC, and they say you can see sporting events and whatnot. And
I'm not
really
sure which ones. Are you talking about the Sling Box maybe or live?
No,
do you have a website for me?
PC4TV.com was one that I was looking at today. And it's only a one-page ad, and it's a one-time fee, and it kind of made me suspicious. So I don't know what else is out there, really.
I'm going to have to look into it. I don't believe that it's what you think it is. I'd be very surprised if you could watch the NFL on that. I mean, there's a lot of these that, you know, you can get Albanian TV.
Right.
All the Albanian football you'd want. But you're not getting the NFL on there. I'd have to look and see. You would almost undoubtedly either have to get a subscription of some kind. I mean, you're not going to, but you know, it's only a matter of time before you can do this kind of thing. You know, there's orb.com. Maybe that's what you're thinking of. That's that, but that requires Orb and Slingbox require a cable connection somewhere. So I think what you're hoping for is not what you're going to get. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. I will keep taking calls now here at 1-800-520-1KFI. Through 4 o'clock. But Dr. Dean Adell's up next. First, though, let's go to the KFI News Center at 1:59, where Lisa Osborne has the latest. Well, that's it for this edition of The Tech Guy on KFI. Thanks so much for listening. If you're ever in the Southern California area, I hope you'll listen live on the radio every Saturday and Sunday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. on KFI AM 640. You can also listen on the internet anytime at KFIAM640.com. Archives of older shows are available online on my website. That's leo.am. Click the audio archives button. And of course, you can subscribe to the podcast, which is leo.am/podcasts/KFI. My thanks to Howard Bailey for providing the theme music for this show. You can listen to Howard's music at soundclick.com. Thanks to DSL Extreme for providing the bandwidth. Of course, first of all, thanks to you for listening. I'll see you next time on KFI.